Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. Today, we'll have some updates for you on turbulent world events from Iraq to Gaza. We'll have news about a major health study that's found fatal overdoses of prescription painkillers dropped dramatically in states where medical marijuana has been legalized. There's a weather warning issued for San Diego's coastal regions due to a hurricane in Baja. We'll have details on that. Plus, hear why some residents of Lakeside's El Monte Valley are not happy about a settlement that Helix Water District has made with a golf company. Learn about a new earthquake app and how to protect your family from quakes like the one that hit Napa. We'll have an interview with a Project Wildlife representative about their upcoming benefit event at Lakeside at a ranch belonging to San Diego Zoo Ambassador Joan Embry. In our second half hour, Public News Service has a roundup of the top national news stories. Our Destination East County hosts will bring you the most exciting festivals and events this week and next, from a living history presentation on Mount Laguna to powwows and a grape stomp festa since it's harvest time in East County. We'll also replay several of our favorites from the last week, including a look back at the infamous East County jailbreak, a green scene report on changes to wilderness protections proposed in Cuyamaca Rancho State Park, a recall on peanut butter, and a story on a new program at SDSU that is music to the ears of aspiring musical artists. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. The onslaught of ISIS forces across Iraq continues to bring news of mounting horrors, and now Iraqi leaders from San Diego to the Middle East are sounding warnings for the world of potential consequences for the West if ISIS is not stopped. Here are some of the latest developments in this emerging international crisis, a crisis that has touched the hearts of many here in San Diego's East County, which is home to an estimated 60,000 Iraqi Americans. Karakash, the largest Christian city in Iraq, has been overrun by Islamic State terrorists, formerly known as ISIS, CNN reports. Sean Malone from Crisis Relief International sent a heart-wrenching text message that confirms, "We lost the city of Karakash. It fell to ISIS, and they are beheading children systematically." Malone said ISIS has pushed back Peshmerga Kurdish forces to within 10 minutes of where Crisis Relief International's team has been working to smuggle food into residents trapped in the city. Thousands more fled into the city of Erbil, and the United Nations has evacuated its staff in Erbil, he said. The Crisis Relief International leader added, "Our team is unmoved and will stay." And he asked for prayers for the safety of the people in northern Iraq from the ISIS extremist goal of mass conversion or death for Christians across that region. Word of a massacre has also emerged from the city of Amerli, the United Nations reports. Mark Arabo, president and CEO of the Neighborhood Market Association here in San Diego and a national leader of Iraqi Christians, denounced the slaughter. Arabo states, "This is yet another reminder of the brutal tactics carried out by ISIS against not simply Christians or Yazidis, but fellow Muslims. We strongly condemn the actions and call upon UN and NATO assistance to prevent further loss of life." Arabo also voiced horror at a video showing the beheading of captured American journalist James Foley by ISIS in retaliation to U.S. airstrikes in Iraq. Arabo says the video shows that ISIS will go to, quote, whatever gruesome extent to strike fear in the hearts of those worldwide, unquote. ISIS has now threatened to behead another American next if U.S. airstrikes are not stopped. Airstrikes aimed at saving lives of hundreds of thousands of people victimized by ISIS. Arabo urged the United States to continue efforts to, quote, exterminate ISIS, unquote. Archbishop Amel Shimun Nona, exiled Archbishop of Mosul, another former Christian stronghold in Iraq, gave an interview report warning that the fate of Christians in Iraq could soon befall the Western world if ISIS is not stopped. "I lost my diocese," the Archbishop says. He is exiled in Erbil, which has now fallen under assault by ISIS as well. The Archbishop warned the world, "Our sufferings today are the prelude of those you, Europeans and Western Christians, will also suffer in the near future." The Archbishop voiced fears that Islamic extremists may be among the growing number of Muslim immigrants in Western nations. He states bluntly, "Your values are not their values. If you do not understand this soon enough, you will become the victims of the enemy you have welcomed in your home." Mark Arabo has called for emergency airlifts to save the lives of hundreds of thousands of Christians and other religious minorities displaced from their homes under the threat of death by ISIS. Now, he announces, he has compiled a list of thousands of names and details in hopes of persuading the Obama administration to authorize airlifts to safe havens elsewhere. Arabo says these individuals are seeking asylum in foreign nations. He adds, this list will give the chance to government officials to provide a name to the victims of this genocide and a hope to the hopeless. Ben Colasso, president of the East County Chaldean American Chamber of Commerce, calls for a different solution. He urges the international community to establish a province for Iraqi Christians as a safe haven inside Iraq. Besides the humanitarian crisis posed by 500,000 or more displaced Iraqi minorities and a widening sphere of atrocities committed by ISIS, the broader question is what the U.S. and the global community should do to halt the destructive path of ISIS, a group that has drawn comparisons to the Nazis in the scale and scope of its atrocities and quest for domination. Iraq's Prime Minister-designate Haider al-Abadi on Sunday called for international efforts to destroy ISIS, Reuters reports. Abadi seeks support from Sunnis and ethnic Kurds to fight the Islamic State's Sunni militants. U.S. airstrikes helped Kurdish forces take back control of a dam in Mosul seized by ISIS, but that is small consolation as ISIS expands its deadly jihadism. U.S. Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel now warns that ISIS poses, quote, an imminent threat to every interest we have. They are as sophisticated and well-funded as any group that we have seen. They're beyond just a terrorist group, Hagel said at a joint press briefing with Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey. He added, we must prepare for everything. On Sunday, a group calling itself the Lizard Squad posted an ISIS flag on Sony PlayStation's network, taking down the system worldwide. More ominously, the group tweeted a bomb threat against an American Airlines flight that was bound for San Diego, coming from Dallas. Sony Online Entertainment President John Smedley was on board, and he was apparently the target of the threat, which fortunately turned out to be a hoax. The flight was diverted to Phoenix and searched, but no weapons were found. Local Iraqi Chaldean leaders reacted to news of the bomb scare close to home. Colasso told East County Magazine that, quote, ISIS is a virus that has infected people from all around the world. We need to hit back hard and fast. We need to kill the virus that has now spread to even Western countries. This is not a game. People are dying. It's unfortunate, he concluded, but what we need to answer back with is brute military force. Arabo has this to say. It has become clear that ISIS is not simply a threat to the Middle Eastern region, but to the safety and well-being of American citizens. We believe that the longer ISIS remains uncontained, the higher the likelihood is that their reach hits home. He concluded in an email that he sent to East County Magazine in answer to our questions. The Obama administration must be quick to confront the realities of the humanitarian disaster occurring in Iraq and the imminent threat that ISIS poses to the United States. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, this is Miriam Raftery.
An indefinite ceasefire has been agreed upon by Hamas and Israel, according to Reuters, after 7 weeks of fighting that has killed and displaced thousands. Initial reports suggest that Israel will lift the blockade on Gaza and allow aid and reconstruction to enter the enclave under supervision, as well as allow fishing access for Palestinians along Gaza's coast. Negotiations are expected to resume in about a month, with larger terms on the table. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barena.
This is Leon Thompson with some major breaking health news. Arguments in favor of medical marijuana just got a big shot in the arm. A new study in the prestigious Journal of Internal Medicine, which is published by the Journal of the American Medical Association, has found that in 13 states where medical marijuana is legal, fatal overdoses from prescription pain medications dropped dramatically. Overall, opioid overdose deaths dropped nearly 20% in the first year after a state legalized medical marijuana, raising to 33.7%, a full third, 5 years after legalization. Overall, death from opioid overdose fell 25% across the 13 states when patients had access to medical cannabis. About 60% of all deaths from opioid overdoses nationwide occur in patients with legitimate prescriptions. However, the number of patients who are prescribed opioids for non-cancer pain has nearly doubled over the last decade, and deaths from prescription painkillers rose 118% from 1999 to 2011, according to the Centers for Disease Control. The study was backed by the National Institute for Health, and prominent health institutions participated, including the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, University of Pennsylvania's Penn Center, Philadelphia VA Medical Center, and Perelman School of Medicine, Albert Einstein College of Medicine, and the Center for AIDS Research. The researchers at some of America's top medical institutions now conclude that medical marijuana appears far safer than opioid prescription painkillers such as OxyContin and Vicodin. The lead author, Dr. Marcus Batchhuber, MD at Penn Center and the Philadelphia VA Medical Center, said the study suggests that people taking prescription opioids may also find that they can supplement with medical marijuana and be able to lower their painkiller dose, thus lowering their risk of overdose. Every day, 113 people in the United States die of these overdoses, and 6,700 are treated in emergency rooms. So reducing overdoses has the potential to save not only lives, but money as well.
This is Miriam Raftery with news about a settlement involving land in the El Monte Valley in Lakeside. Helix Water District's Board of Directors voted 4-1 on August 20th to approve a settlement agreement with El Monte Canyon and its successor, El Capitan Golf Course. The settlement ends a 6-year dispute over plans for a water recharge project and wildlife habitat restoration in Lakeside's El Monte Valley. The settlement allows for sale of the property and habitat restoration, and, much to the dismay of some residents, sand mining at the site. The district says the deal is beneficial to ratepayers, but critics, including dissenting board member Joel Scalzitti, says the settlement is a bad idea and that the land is worth much more than the $9 million price tag agreed upon. Under the settlement, the golf club will make a $1 million deposit to Helix Water. In turn, Helix declares the land surplus, opening a 60-day period for the San Diego River Conservancy to have first rights to purchase the land. If the Conservancy doesn't buy it, or any other public agency, then both parties release all claims against each other, dismiss all the lawsuits, and the golf club gets an option to acquire the property during the next 3.5 years by paying the remaining $8 million of the $9 million appraised value. But Scalzitti thinks the property is worth a lot more and notes that the appraisal is a couple of years old, when the real estate market was lower. Moreover, he states, I believe the group we're dealing with doesn't have the integrity to execute the deal. Deals were cut and made and never finished, Scalzitti contends, UT San Diego reports. Luis Tejada, a district employee who spoke at the meeting as a ratepayer, also thinks the appraised value is too low since the site has been identified as a valuable source for sand mining. Tejada says the appraisal couldn't have included the value of the sand, which he estimates at $32 million to $45 million. That's roughly 4 or 5 times more than what the district will receive when the land sells. But Carlos Lugo, general manager for Helix, insists the sale of the property will reduce the district's potential for liability and costs for maintenance, trash cleanup, and security, according to a statement that the district released to the media. The district has paid over $1 million in legal fees so far and had another $300,000 budgeted. The dispute started back in 2008 on the 460-acre project. El Capitan Golf claimed the Helix breached agreements, but Helix cross-filed complaints claiming it was El Capitan that failed to fulfill its obligations. The story starts in 1997, when the El Cap Golf Club leased the property from Helix Water District to develop a golf course. But after concluding that wasn't financially feasible, the golf club formed a plan to join with the Endangered Habitats League and restore the land, creating a nature preserve with marshes, wetlands, and woodlands. Meanwhile, Helix and Padre Dam Municipal Water District were working to develop a wastewater recycling project to purify water for the district's customers across East County, a process that would have included percolating water through the ground in El Monte Valley. That, too, fell through, and both sides filed complaints against each other. The district had also planned to mine sand, a valuable commodity. Bill Adams represented both the golf group and the Endangered Habitats League at the proceeding. He said that the group aims to buy and restore the land, also doing what he termed a minimal amount of mining at the site, which might be called the El Capitan River Restoration Project. Residents of El Monte Valley, however, have advised the board in past public meetings that they opposed sand mining in the valley. William Ortiz, a Lakeside resident, testified on August 20th that he wants the valley conserved. just like the Lakeside River Park Conservancy has done with the San Diego River elsewhere in the area. Ortiz opposes any sand mining, pointing out that it could stir up valley fever spores known to be in the soil in El Monte Valley. Helix director Kathleen Hedberg voted for the settlement, but she asked that the $9 million be returned to the ratepayers. Staff and legal counsel looked stunned, and no one responded, reported Charlene Ayers, editor of the Ranter's Roost, a backcountry land use discussion forum. Ayers called the settlement a, quote, lousy deal, unquote, because the district sold surplus property for a pittance, in her words, and because El Monte Valley will now be sand mine over the objections of its residents. The Ranter's Roost editor concludes, woe to the Helix Water District ratepayers.
This is Ed Barreto with the weather warning. The National Weather Service has issued a beach hazards warning that Hurricane Maria is approaching along San Diego's coastline, where strong waves, coastal flooding, and riptide currents may occur now through Thursday night. The storm will likely result in dangerous ocean conditions, according to the Weather Service. Boaters and beachgoers should use caution in and around the water. And swimmers and surfers, even experts, should stay near a lifeguard and obey signs. Beginners may just want to stay on the sand. If you are caught in a riptide, remember to paddle along the beach until you reach calmer waters. Do not swim towards the beach as you may be pulled further out to sea. In Baja California, winds from the hurricane reach more than 100 miles an hour. Though the storm has weakened as it moves north, large ocean swells and surf are expected. For updates, visit the National Weather Service's Hurricane Center.
A Lakeside teenager who tried to cross a busy intersection on a red light on July 23rd was struck by a car. Now, over a month later, Jason Buss remains in a coma at Rady Children's Hospital. His mother, Jeanette Buss, told 10 News that her 15-year-old son underwent surgery to relieve pressure on his brain and that she hopes to see him smile and talk again, but doesn't know what his future holds. Jason was with a friend on their way to go fishing when he became impatient and tried to cross the intersection at Woodside Avenue and Riverford Road in Lakeside, where he was struck. His mother said she does not blame the driver and can imagine the devastation the driver must feel. This is Rebecca Williamson for East County Magazine.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon. My special guest today is Brittany Shirley, who is the development manager for Project Wildlife. A lot of you know Project Wildlife for the great work they do, caring for our injured and abandoned and sick wildlife in the county and helping return healthy animals to the wild, as well as promoting conservation education. Brittany, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, I understand that Project Wildlife has a very special event coming up right here in East County. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes, it's very exciting. We are hosting our annual We Like It Wild event, which is going to be at Joan Embry's beautiful ranch in Lakeside.
And the date and the time?
It's on Sunday, September 14th. We have a VIP reception from 4 to 5 p.m., and then general, kind of the main event is from 5 to 8 p.m.
Wonderful. Now, Joan Embry, for the younger folks there that might not remember her, has been the longtime ambassador for the San Diego Zoo, traveling all over with these wonderful animals. Some of you may remember seeing Johnny Carson and The Tonight Show and all the critters that she would bring on to the Hollywood set there. That was Joan Embry.
Yes, she's very well known for being the spokesperson for the zoo and just for being an advocate for wild animals everywhere.
Yeah, and her ranch is located right here in Lakeside.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful ranch. At the event, we're going to have some of our own animal ambassadors there from Project Wildlife, but guests will be really excited to see a lot of her exotic animals.
So they'll see both some local wildlife, such as what, for example?
We'll have our animal ambassadors are all animals from throughout San Diego County that were brought in, and they were unable to be released due to some type of permanent injury or something like that. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have a barn owl there, probably a couple of other raptors, a hawk possibly. So we'll have some of the local wildlife, but Joan Embry has a whole wonderful collection of wild animals there. She has some lemurs, she has kangaroos, a zebra. So it's just really exciting. It's
a cheetah, I understand.
She does have a cheetah, so it's definitely a unique experience for everyone.
It sounds like just a marvelous event. I've actually been to her ranch before for a different benefit event, and it really was a marvelous experience.
Mm-hmm.
So besides the exotic animals and the local wildlife, what else is going to be going on here that people can enjoy?
Well, it's a lot of fun. The guests are going to be animal enthusiasts, environmental enthusiasts. So in addition to the animal encounters, we're going to have a really great silent and live auction with some really unique items. We're also going to have delicious food and just some great music. It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, beer, wine, it says here, all kinds of things. It says here there's also a photo opportunity with Joan Embry, so you can get your picture taken with Joan and one of those wonderful animals, maybe?
Yep, some of the guests will get to have that photo opportunity with her and just get to meet her in person and talk with her. She's so inspirational and she's very empowering to be around, so that will be very nice for a lot of the guests.
Yeah, she's great. Mm-hmm. Now tell us what the funds are used for, a little bit more about what Project Wildlife does here locally to help wildlife.
Sure. Well, this is our main annual fundraiser, and all the funds that we raise at this event go directly to our work to rehabilitate sick, injured, and abandoned wildlife from throughout San Diego County. It also goes toward our educational programs to kind of inform the public on how to coexist with local wildlife.
Can you give us an example of a local wildlife rescue that stands out in your mind?
Actually, yes. Just last week, I was fortunate to attend a release of a red-tailed hawk. She had been brought to us last November. So this is November of 2013, and she had been electrocuted. So she has been in rehab for a very long time. Most animals aren't with us for that long.
Was this a power line electrocution?
We don't exactly know. Our veterinarian suspected that she probably landed on some type of either an electrical line or some type of a power box because the wounds were very severe. So it was actually kind of a miracle that she survived and was able to go through rehab so well with us. But the release just happened last week, and
wonderful.
I got to see it. It was beautiful. It was amazing.
Now, you were telling me that electrocution injuries can take a while to show up. Can you explain how that works and why, if people see an animal that's been electrocuted, it's a good idea to try to get it treatment even if it initially seems okay?
Oh, sure. And I actually just learned about this myself. It's quite fascinating. If an animal's been electrocuted, symptoms of it don't normally show up for about 10 to 14 days, where it's obvious that that's what caused the animal's injuries. So when an animal comes into us, sometimes it can be a little bit of mystery until they've been with us for a week or so. And
because it's an internal injury, and it works its way out.
Exactly. So I did not know that.
That's absolutely fascinating. Well, thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
If people find injured wildlife, how can they reach you? I know I had that happen recently where there was a baby bird that was injured in my backyard and I didn't know what to do with it. It was late at night and I couldn't find any help.
Yeah. We hear that pretty often. I mean, we've been around since 1972, but still a lot of people don't know what to do when they find injured wildlife. Our care center, which if you go to projectwildlife.org, the address and all the information will be on there. But we are available to take in animals at our care center 24 hours a day.
Oh, really?
Yep. And we have staff working there very early in the morning to late in the night. So we take in wild animals all the time there at the care center.
Do you have a care center here in East County or is that in San Diego?
Our main care center is in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, we take in animals from all throughout San Diego County. So people who find animals can bring them to us. We also will collaborate with other local veterinary offices for locations where people can drop off animals and even animal control services.
What if you see an injured animal that you don't want to pick up? There's an injured, you know, deer or coyote or something like that. What do you do?
Exactly. Well, if a person's not able to get the animal themselves and bring it into us, we encourage them to contact animal services, or they can also call our wild animal info line.
And that number is 619-225-WILD, W-I-L-D.
You know, we try to be as accommodating as possible so we can get that animal into us and get it the care that it needs.
Very good. Were you helping to rehab some of the animals after the wildfires that we've had here?
We did get a few. We had a couple of raptors come in that had been abandoned that were found after the fire. Mm. So they were relatively young, so they kind of had to start their journey at the beginning with us.
Very good. Well, it's a wonderful organization, Project Wildlife. So if people want to get information about tickets or maybe attend the We Like It Wild, Where can they go to get that information?
They can go to welikeitwild.org.
Very nice. Okay, welikeitwild.org. Well, I'm hoping to stop by and cover it for East County Magazine.
We would love that.
Look forward to seeing you there. Thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
Residents in Napa had a rude awakening in the middle of the night when a 6.0 earthquake occurred last week, resulting in hundreds of injuries. San Diego County reminds San Diegans that there is a lot you can do to get ready for a major earthquake. Being prepared can make all the difference to assure the safety and survival of you and your family in a major disaster. You can learn what to do before, during, and after an earthquake by visiting ReadySanDiego.org. There you can download a free template for a family disaster plan and create a home emergency kit for your loved ones. Being informed is also key in a disaster, and the county's free SD Emergency mobile app has interactive features to help you prepare. But its greatest use may be during a disaster when it shows up-to-date open shelters, health warnings, and other information. The free app is available from the Apple Store and Google Play. You can also register at shakeout.org to learn more about preparedness and participate in the world's largest earthquake drill on October 16th at 10:16 a.m. Last year, almost 25 million people practiced drop, cover, and hold on, which is considered the safest way to survive a quake. Learn more at the site. If a strong earthquake occurs, water and gas lines could be damaged. Phones and electricity could be out. Roads could be unsafe, buckled or blocked by debris. If buildings are damaged, emergency officials would be tied up with priority calls. That's when you will need to rely on your emergency preparedness stores. That's when you will need to rely on your stock of emergency supplies. Gather items for a home, work, and car emergency kit to last at least 3 days. Items should be stored in a ready-to-grab waterproof bag or container, such as a plastic tub. Pre-packaged emergency kits are available at some big-box stores or at the American Red Cross, but residents can also put their own kits together by buying items or gathering items from home. Include the following items in your emergency stock. Water, at least 1 gallon per person per day. Non-perishable food. First aid kit. A whistle. A radio. A flashlight. And batteries. Also, keep a spare set of contact lenses or glasses handy. Personalize your kits for your family by considering the dietary needs of infants, pets, and other family members. If anyone in your family requires medication, keep an extra week's supply in your kits. Keep a copy of important documents such as insurance policies, identification, and bank records in case you have to evacuate quickly. You could scan and store them online or in a thumb drive. Do the same with family photos. A disaster could happen while parents are at work and the children at school, or in the middle of the night, as happened in Napa. If you are away from your family, you cannot count on phone lines because they can quickly get overloaded. So it's important to have a family disaster plan that includes several meeting places and an out-of-state emergency contact who family members can call or text. Text messaging is often a more successful way to communicate during a disaster. Create a complete family disaster plan with important phone numbers and information you may need in an emergency. The plan templates are available in English, Spanish, Tagalog, and Vietnamese. If you have a plan, review it. Make sure it is still up to date and practice it. Stay informed. During an emergency, you will want official information. The County of San Diego emergency website is www.sdcountyemergency.com and will be updated with news including road closures and shelters. If you prefer a mobile version, download the county's free mobile app. Residents can also sign up to get free emergency alerts by cell phone during a disaster. Register your phone for free at alertsandiego.com and sign up for Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts at eastcountymagazine.org. If the power is out, you can use your battery-powered radio to get updates. Residents can call 211 to get information about emergency updates or services. The County of San Diego will also send out information on Twitter via the San Diego County and Ready San Diego accounts. The Family Disaster Plan includes these tips and more for earthquakes. Before a quake strikes, 1. Check home for potential hazards, things that could topple over and cause injuries such as televisions, bookshelves, and other heavy furniture. 2. Use special hooks to secure photos and art to walls. 3. Plan and rehearse where you and your family can seek cover in each room of your house. During an earthquake, you should 1. Drop, cover, and hold on. Get down low to avoid falling, find a sturdy desk or table to seek cover under, and hold on to it while covering your head with your other arm. If there are no tables, find an interior wall that is not near any heavy furniture or glass, near picture frames, windows, or under light fixtures. Scoot down and cover your head. If you're outside, find an open area away from buildings, trees, and overhead utility wires. Sit down and cover your head. And make sure after the quake to check your home for potential hazards, and if you smell gas, turn it off at the valve. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barena.
Welcome to the Public News Service. I'm Mary Sherman. Tens of thousands of Americans are at risk of losing their health coverage through the Affordable Care Act due to inaccurate or incomplete document information. We get the story from Troy Wild in Arizona.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services says it has sent out notices to several hundred thousand people whose personal information, such as a Social Security or permanent resident card number, is incomplete or different from the information the government has on file. Patty Urias is with Enroll America, which helps Arizonans get insurance through the ACA.
There's always that possibility that numbers are being transposed or there's an incorrect digit that's been entered, and all that needs to happen is that correct digit or the correct number needs to be submitted so that the discrepancy can be cleared up.
According to a press release from HHS, people notified of this have until September 5th to provide the necessary information, or their ACA health coverage will end on September 30th. Meanwhile, Urias says about 5% or 6,600 of the 120,000 Arizonans who purchased health coverage through the Affordable Care Act are impacted by this. She says anyone required to provide citizenship or immigration information should double check to make sure it's accurate. I'm Troy Wild.
In other health-related news, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recently became the first federal agency to acknowledge health risks from cell phone use. But Mark Shearer reports it suddenly backtracked.
Sometime before early June, unnoticed by many in the media, the CDC posted significant new wording in a frequently asked questions section on its website. To the question, do cell phones cause health problems in children, it read, it's too soon to know for sure, and went on to say children will have more exposure over a lifetime growing up with cell phones. But last week, that was changed to simply, it's not known if cell phone use by children can cause health problems. D.C.-based public interest lawyer Jim Turner speculates the changes were triggered either by industry lobbyists, government officials, or both.
CDC was sitting over there and put the thing up the first time, and then they said, oh, wait a minute, let's take it down. Somebody alerted them that they wanted it down or there was going to be trouble.
The CDC has not returned a request for comment.
Sunday's earthquake near Napa, California, has led to renewed calls for early warning systems that can provide valuable seconds of warning before tremblor. Such systems are in place in Mexico and Japan, but California's lagged behind those countries and is still trying to identify funding sources for the roughly $80 million needed for implementation. Family and supporters of Michael Brown on Monday celebrated the life of the black teenager killed in a shooting by a white officer in Ferguson, Missouri. People crowded inside a church for a funeral service with calls for peace and police reform. It was a much different scene from the violent nightly protests held in the city for more than a week, and authorities coming under fire for mass arrests and the use of heavy-handed tactics and military gear. Affordable rental housing is out of reach for many of the country's poorest workers, according to a new report. The National Low-Income Housing Coalition found that in 2012, there were just 31 rental homes affordable and available for every 100 extremely low-income households. And in every state, at least half of those renters paid more than half of their income on rent and utilities. The National Park Service's ban on aerial drones being used inside national parks, primarily to capture photos and videos, is now in full effect nationwide. More from Dan Hyman.
The Park Service initiated the drone ban in late June, but gave park superintendents 2 months to implement the policy. Ray O'Neill is the acting chief ranger at Zion National Park. He says the policy tightens a long-standing ban on private aircraft being used in national park airspace.
We have had a ban on aerial delivery in national parks for decades, and we started to become concerned here at Zion, and others at the national level started to be concerned that our existing regulation might not be sufficient to deal with drones.
O'Neill says there were cases of the aerial drones disturbing and scaring bighorn sheep and people at Zion National Park. The Park Service reports that similar events involving drones occurred at other national parks. Dan Hyman reporting.
41 conservation and sportsman groups, including the Colorado Wildlife Federation, are asking the Republican National Committee to reconsider its support of states and the private sector taking responsibility for public lands. There are efforts in Washington to relinquish control of some public lands to states such as Colorado. The National Wildlife Federation and other groups are concerned that move would impact the protection of the land and with it the economy that relies on it. It's not your grandfather's credit union. Just ask the growing number of millennials who are among those turning to the not-for-profit financial cooperatives. Mona Shan spoke with one of them and has her story.
22-year-old Elizabeth Ebeth Fielder serves as a sort of young people's ambassador for Michigan First Credit Union, and she says she's one of many millennials who came of age during the financial crisis. As a result, she says many feel a philosophical pull toward credit unions, which often offer lower fees and better interest rates than for-profit banks, along with a focus on financial education.
We don't want to be looked down on because we have questions or because we just don't know yet. We want to be taught and we want to make good decisions, so it matters a lot.
Nationwide, credit unions surpassed the 100 million membership mark this summer, a milestone which includes nearly half the population of Michigan. I'm Mona Shand reporting.
I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's activities in East County include living history presentations complete with mountain men and cowboys. It's also start of the powwow season at Barona and football season for the Aztecs. Plus, we'll tell you all about an art show, free concerts, a family movie in the park. Plus, we'll have a preview of next week's top events, including a popular annual tradition in East County's wine-growing region, a Grape Stomp Festa. So stay tuned for all of these and more on this week's Destination East County.
The 44th Annual Barona Powwow will take place from Friday, August 29th through Sunday, August 31st at the baseball field on the Barona Reservation. The event features competitions among Native American dancers from across the nation, competing in events such as gourd dancing and fancy dance. You'll also find Native American arts and crafts, food, and more. This event is free and open to the public. For more information, Google Barona Powwow.
See the past come alive as the Laguna Mountain Volunteers present Living History, August 30th and 31st, during a reenactment of life in the Laguna Mountains, going back in time to before the early 1900s. Visit with Native Americans, surveyors, mountain men, and rugged cowboys of the Campo Cattle Company. Meet the first Cleveland Forest Ranger in the Descanso District and relive the travels of a 1908 pioneer family from Imperial Valley. This year's event also celebrates the 70th anniversary of Smokey the Bear. Presentations will be held hourly from 9:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. both days, and admission is free at the Red-Tailed Roost Volunteer Headquarters on Mount Laguna in Cleveland National Forest.
County Parks invites you to a free screening of the Disney movie Frozen on August 30th at the Sycamore Canyon Gooden Ranch Reserve in Lakeside. You can find details on this and other family-friendly events in county parks at sdparks.org.
The Aztec football team's season opener takes place on Sunday, August 30th at Qualcomm Stadium when the San Diego State team squares off against Northern Arizona University. For tickets, visit goaztecs.com.
Mission Trails Regional Park invites you to two free concerts this weekend on Saturday, August 30th. Marka Cassidy, a guitarist, singer, and member of the Osage Tribe, will perform along with contemporary singer-songwriter Buriana Leah Pruitt. Marka Cassidy received an artist grant this year from the Osage Nation Foundation, enabling her to record her new CD, Songs from the Well. On Sunday, August 31st, Mary Lou Brandywine, Jonathan Crick, and Bruce Jones will perform a variety of music on shakuhachi flutes. For more information on these events, you can visit mtrp.org.
There's still time to take in some of the end-of-the-summer concerts and car shows. El Cajon's classic cruise nights continue on Wednesday evenings from 5 to 8 p.m. in downtown El Cajon. Santee's Summer Concerts takes place on Thursday evenings starting at 5:30 p.m. at the Trolley Square Center. Plus, on Friday nights, El Cajon invites you to enjoy dinner and a concert. The music starts at 6 p.m. in Promenade Park. Find details on our calendar at eastcountymagazine.org for a full schedule of all of these community events.
Talented artists from Julian and nearby communities will present their paintings, photography, mosaics, ceramics, printmaking, jewelry, and other works of fine art during Julian's Labor Day weekend art show this Saturday and Sunday, August 30th and 31st, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Admission to the show is free, and many of the artists will be available to discuss their work. The art show will be held at Julian's historic town hall on Main Street in the heart of the historic gold mining town.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. The Sequon Band of Kumeyaay Nation will host its 25th annual powwow on September 5th to the 7th at the Sequon Reservation in El Cajon, located behind the Sequon Casino. A powwow is a celebration and a time for people to join together, sing, dance, renew old friendships, and make new ones. Traditionally, powwows also welcomed the beginning of life in springtime and provided a place for young people to meet and court. Today, dancers and singers from tribes across the nation compete for prize money as well as to keep up relationships. Only registered contestants may participate in the dancing contest, but everyone can take part when an intertribal dance is announced, visitors included. Dancers are in the center of the circle, with the audience forming a larger circle around them to bring together the community and the culture. There are no spectators at powwow. Sequon's website states, everyone is a participant.
One of our backcountry's popular annual activities is to roll up your pants, bare your feet, and join in an annual harvest tradition. On September 6th, the Julian Grape Stomp Festival will take place at Mangini Winery. Guests are invited to help stomp tons of grapes, and wine tasting will also be available, along with food and merchandise vendors. That's all for this week. You can find all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org. If you have an event you'd like to add to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County show on KNSA, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County. See you around, East County.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, and today I am guest hosting our Sounds of History segment, bringing you another colorful story from East County's past. I have a special guest today. His name is Larry McKim, and Larry was a firefighter for many years with the El Cajon Fire Department. He's the historian for the fire department, and he's here to tell us about his own role in a very daring rescue at the old El Cajon jail, which was not exactly Alcatraz. You're going to hear why. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Well, good morning. Thanks. Thanks for having us.
So you were on duty the morning of August 24th, 1984.
Yes.
Tell us about the call that came in.
Well, we were out at the training facility, at Heartland Training Facility on North Marshall, and about an hour into the drill, we heard the radio come across as someone breaking out of the county jail there.
Which was a 10-story building, about 200 feet high, where the El Cajon Courthouse is now. It used to be the top three floors up there with the jail.
Correct. So the chief had sent the ambulance code 3 to pick me up at the training facility and bring me back code 3 to perform the rescue.
Why you?
Well, I'd gone to the heavy rescue school at Port Hueneme, and so I had been trained to do heavy rescues and to perform rappelling and to teach our guys how to do the rappelling in case something like this ever occurred, not knowing that it would ever happen. But sure enough, on August 24th, it happened.
So you got to the scene, and what did you find?
When we got to the scene, we had heard by that time that somebody had fallen to his death, and the other person was still dangling from a rope on the third bottom ledge that you can see from the east side of the building.
Yeah, and these were young kids. They were a couple of 18-year-olds. The one who died, tragically, was in for burglary, and the other fellow that you were sent to rescue had been in there for a parole violation.
Correct.
18 years old.
Yes.
Okay, so you get up on top of the building, and what did your chief say to you?
Well, Chief Stray told me to go up there and take care of the rescue. And then Captain Mike Thompson at the time, he said, you tie everything off. If you die, it's going to be your own fault. So nobody else is going to take responsibility.
Great. Very encouraging words.
Yeah.
Okay. So I jumped off this building with this
rope. So I'm up there with my crew, and we started tying everything off. And then I got ready to go over the ledge, and a big guy named Jim Lockwood had a hold of me. And Jim said, I've got you, and I won't let you go. So I said, okay, if you're ready, I'm ready. So he finally let me loose over the edge, and I rappelled down and went down and then pulled up about 6-8 feet to the side of this young man and then told him, you know.
Who was trapped on a ledge, right?
Trapped on a ledge.
Saw his buddy, you know, didn't make it and decided this is far enough, or he just couldn't get down.
He couldn't get down that far as he could go.
Now, what had happened? I understand they had kicked through the wall of the cell and they had
kicked a hole through the wall and then had tied mattress covers and stripped it down and tied into a long rope, basically. If you know anything about knots, time, distance, and weight on an overhand knot will pull through. And that's exactly what happened.
Okay, so he was really trapped. He was stuck up there.
Yep, he's stuck on that ledge, just hanging onto it. And the ledge is about 9 inches long, and it sloped on a little bit of an angle so that the water will run off it.
Mm-hmm.
But he just sat there and laid there until I pulled up alongside him.
So what were you thinking when you went over the edge?
I was pretty nervous going over the edge, actually.
How long was your rope?
My rope was 200 foot long, but you figure it tied off some of it and 186 foot down to the ground.
That left you 14 feet to go when you got to the bottom.
Correct. But with Kernmantle rope, you have a 10% stretch. So
you're pretty close.
We were pretty close at the end of when we got down to the ground after the rescue was over with. We were at the end of the rope.
So when you got down there and you found this guy on the ledge, what did you say to him or what did he say to you?
Well, when I got up alongside him at the edge, I told him, I said, don't touch me or any of my equipment, or you might have a long way to go down to the ground, because your life didn't mean anything to me at the time. I was, you know, pretty nervous and figured he's a prisoner, so.
Yeah. How did you get him down?
Well, I tied a pompier belt that we used to carry on our ladder trucks to keep you secured in the basket. I tied that onto him, which immediately hooked onto me, so I knew he couldn't fall. He may be upside down if I didn't get the other safety line on him. But in the meantime, at least he was secure to me. Then I had another rope sent down from the top and then tied that on him. It's called a bullet on a coil, which we no longer use that anymore either. Just, you know, 30 years ago training, and that's what we knew and that's what we did. So today they have rescue harnesses and class one harnesses to tie and secure to people. It makes it safer.
Very good. So how long did it take to finally reach the ground?
I want to say it was like 45 minutes, but it just seemed like it was seconds and minutes, you know, when I was doing the rescue. It just went by so quickly. It was interesting to, you know, to get down to the ground with him and then finally touch the earth.
Yeah. Now, you received a lot of commendations for your bravery, I understand.
Yes, former Mayor John Reber gave me a Class C commendation from the city.
Mm-hmm.
My captain wrote a nice letter on me. Former Congressman Jay LeSueur, who was a lieutenant at the jail at the time, and he was in charge of the detention center. He gave me a letter. I got a letter from one of the judges there in the courthouse.
Right, and we've seen all these. You brought in that wonderful album you have as the historian for the fire department. So after the jailbreak incident, they did make some efforts to make it more secure. They strengthened up some of the things there, but some of the windows and things. But it didn't work so well.
No, I had a couple more jailbreaks after that, so.
They did. Let's see, there was one guy that managed to get all the way out, and he was found hiding in the restroom of the courthouse. That wasn't real safe. There was another guy who got out for a whole month to go visit his dying father, and they found him a month later in a brothel and brought him back, and he was apparently the hero of the jailhouse because he actually got away with it. And then there were seven more who broke out, and as of the old newspaper articles I found, I don't think all of them were ever found. Do you know?
I have no idea if they've been caught yet or today or not.
Yeah. Those guys had tied 30 bedsheets together to make their big escape. And the walls, apparently, some of them were made of styrofoam or some kind of foam material that was so lightweight they could kick it out.
Correct.
Apparently, they said the walls were more secure at the local dog pound than at the jail.
Yes, because it's made of blocks, so nobody's going to be kicking a hole through that.
Yeah. County Supervisor George Bailey at the time called it a multi-million dollar turkey and said it was the least secure jail, you know, who knows, maybe anywhere, certainly in San Diego County.
Without a doubt, it had to be the least secure jail in the history of mankind.
Finally, in the 90s, they just gave up the ghost on it, and it did close down. It's not there anymore. Now it's just a courthouse building.
Correct.
Larry, thank you very much for joining us here today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, bringing us another colorful tale from East County's past here on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Miriam Raftery with a story that should be music to the ears of aspiring music students at San Diego State University. SDSU is launching a new program aimed at empowering music students to run their own successful businesses. Open to students in all music disciplines, from classical voice to jazz and composition, the Music Entrepreneurship and Business Program is a professional Bachelor of Music degree with a specialization in entrepreneurship. An article by Beth Downing-Chi, posted SDSU's News Center, reports that the program is a partnership between the College of Business Administration and the College of Professional Studies and Fine Arts. Associate Dean Donna Connedy says students need help in today's highly competitive environment and that the new program will provide them with confidence and skills to be successful entrepreneurs. While other colleges around the nation offer programs geared to help musicians in commercial music fields gain entrepreneurship skills, SDSU is believed to be the first university in the nation open to any artistically qualified student. If successful, the program could become a model for other departments on campus, such as design, theater, and film, to boost career opportunities for creative students through similar entrepreneurship programs.
This is Ed Barena for East County Magazine on KNSJ. With the threat of wildfires across multiple states, the nonprofit Federal Alliance for Safe Homes, or FLASH, offers wildfire prevention tips for residents. You can protect your home and prepare your family for wildfires. Remember, embers can be blown more than a mile from the flame, so it is critical to take action to make your home wildfire resilient. Here are some ways to prepare your family. Have a fire disaster plan, including at least two predetermined evacuation routes, a NOAA weather radio, and disaster kit for your family. Follow any and all evacuation orders immediately. Here are some other ways you can protect your home. Identify an emergency water supply within 1,000 feet of your home through one of the following: community water hydrant system, drafting site on a lake, cooperative emergency storage tank with neighbors, or a swimming pool. Remove fuels that can lead flames to your home or that can become ignited from wind-blown embers, including dead grass, leaves, and branches within 30 feet of buildings. Dry leaves and litter from roofs, rain gutters, decks, and walkways, dead and dry litter at the base of plants, tree branches within 6 to 10 feet off the ground, firewood within 30 feet of buildings, and continuous beds of combustible vegetation on the ground or in treetops that can bring large flames within 100 feet of your home. Clean your gutters, eaves, and roof to make sure they are clear of debris. Plant species that retain moisture and resist ignition, including native fire-resistant vegetation, you can check with your local forestry agency for this, fire-prone trees and shrubs away from your home and far enough apart so they won't ignite one another. Make sure your street number is legible and clearly marked for emergency responders. Move any storage sheds including lawnmowers, grills, gas cans, and tanks away from your home. Before a threat, landscape with fire-resistant native plant species that retain moisture and resist ignition. Install metal screening that blocks embers from entering your buildings, including non-combustible attic crawl space vents and around low decks, non-combustible skirting around mobile homes, and if under a wildfire threat, only remove dead leaves or vegetation when local garbage collection services will have time to pick up the debris. Federal Alliance for Safe Homes, or FLASH, is a nonprofit organization and is a consumer advocacy group for strengthening homes and safeguarding families from natural and man-made disasters. For more information on wildfire prevention, visit www.flash.org or www.protectyourhome.org.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. California State Parks is proposing to remove 672 acres of wilderness designation in Cuyamaca Rancho State Park here in East County. A preliminary general plan and draft environmental impact report for the park is now available for public review. The 45-day public review period is open now and closes on October 6th. At earlier public meetings, members of the public raised a variety of concerns, including availability of horse camps, hiking trails, and mountain biking opportunities, loss of biodiversity in the forest, bulldozing in fire-damaged areas, fire protection, and reforestation, among other concerns. Details are available on the Cuyamaca Rancho State Park General Plan webpage. All comments must be postmarked or emailed by October 6th. You can also find information on how to submit your comments at eastcountymagazine.org in our Green Living section. A final opportunity for comment on the preliminary general plan and draft EIR will occur at the State Park and Recreation Commission meeting currently scheduled for November 14th in San Diego. At this meeting, the commission will vote on whether or not to approve the new general plan.
Before you pack up a peanut butter sandwich for your children's school lunches, check the labels. There is a recall of several brands of peanut butters and almond butters sold at Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, Safeway, which owns Vons, Kroger's, which owns Ralph's, and Food for Less, as well as others. The products have been recalled due to possible salmonella contamination after several cases of illnesses occurred, according to the Hain Celestial Group. The recalled products were sold under the brand names Arrowhead Mills Peanut Butters, Maranatha Almond Butters and Peanut Butters, and private label brands for Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, Kroger, and Safeway. For a complete list of recalled products, visit the health section of our website at eastcountymagazine.org. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Ed Barena.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Kevin McLeod, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.